Our fifth case for this morning is United States against Tyler Sanders, 13-1301. And we will hear from Ms. Varner.
Good morning. May it please the court. Sarah Varner for Tyler Sanders. On the morning of September 16, 2009, Mr. Sanders was under investigation for selling cocaine. That morning, when he got up and left his house, there was an operations plan in place by the police, which included surveillance of Mr. Sanders, waiting for Mr. Sanders to leave his home, stopping him on a traffic stop, which would involve a canine sniff of his car, a canine sniff at his residence, and then application for a search warrant. After Mr. Sanders left his home, he was indeed pulled over by police officers. There were, by my count, at least five officers involved in that stop, at which point they recovered 0.02 grams of marijuana from his car, which is the equivalent of 1/50th of a packet of Splenda. At that time, Mr. Sanders was arrested. He was taken to his home. And in the meantime, a canine had visited Mr. Sanders' home and had not alerted to the presence of marijuana in the home, or the presence of any drugs in the home.
So could I jump to the chase? I mean,
sure.
You are arguing that this is one of those situations in which the police efforts to obtain a search warrant, and this is a search warrant that winds up, the search itself is suppressed for merits, falls in the kind of in the exception, if I can call it that, that the Brema case articulated. But here's my problem with your argument. You equate suppressibility, if you will, with egregiousness. And that's not quite what Brema said. What it said is the police acted egregiously, for instance, by undertaking a warrantless search for the very purpose of obtaining evidence to increase a defendant's sentence. And that's the key part. And you don't really come to grips with it. And I have no reason, I can't see any reason, although you can tell me if there is one, why this wasn't really just a warrant to see, you know, how big a drug dealer is this guy? You know, they should have, of course, put the evidence about the dog failing to alert in the warrant affidavit. That was a mistake. They paid their price for it. But I don't see where this is really a sentencing-focused behavior on the part of the police as opposed to simply just a criminal investigation that went awry.
Your Honor, I would not... we are not positing that suppression is warranted in every case. What we are arguing is that the Brema case left open a situation where if police acted egregiously, which we can spend a lot of time trying to figure out what egregiously means, or we can just kind of incorporate that it's bad acts on the part of the police, that if police acted egregiously, particularly bad, that in that case, there may be a set of circumstances where this court was willing to apply the exclusionary rule at the sentencing hearing.
But the egregiously point, when you're thinking about sentencing, whereas you've conceded, you know, hearsay comes in, the exclusionary rule doesn't apply as a general rule, it's got to be for the purpose of obtaining evidence. And I think in the post-Booker world, judges have broad power for sentencing, and if they think the government has done something wrong, I suppose they can take that into account if they want to as part of this. But it's a very narrow point. It's not just were the police lying or were the police doing other bad things. It's got to be to abuse the sentencing process, doesn't it?
I don't think so, Your Honor, and that was something that was argued at the sentencing hearing in the court below. The Brema exception says, for example, e.g.,
yeah,
where police, you know, deliberately do something in violation of rights in order to increase the sentence of the defendant. But this is the case that's before you, is us to ask, is it limited to cases where we can prove that the officers had the intention of increasing the sentence, or is it more based upon this egregious standard? Are there other behaviors that would meet egregious that this court...
Has any court gone this path? It seems to me the courts of appeals have a variety of decisions, some of them non-precedential.
Your Honor, I can find no case in our circuit where the defendant has asked this court to look at particularly the word egregious in that exception and set and rule, are we willing to extend that past a situation where we can prove the intent of the officers at sentencing? Are there other behaviors that may qualify as egregious? And in this case...
Why would intent of the officers matter?
Your Honor, that's something that we are arguing, is that the intent of the officers shouldn't matter, except in the sense that the exclusionary rule analysis in general asks us to look at the culpability of the officer's conduct.
He's talking about objective reasonableness, and there are a bunch of cases saying that intent never matters for purposes of the Fourth Amendment.
And that's what we would argue. That's the approach that we would like this court to take.
Let's forget about intent. Has any court of appeals held that evidence must be suppressed at sentencing for any reason?
The Verdugo case in the Ninth Circuit in 1968
said it was possible.
Yes.
Didn't order suppression.
I don't believe that they did in that case. Actually, I believe that case said that in the goals of sentencing, when the range of sentence is large and the fruits of a search could increase the sentence, that in that case the exclusionary rule could apply at sentencing. And that's what we're asking this court to do.
No, you're asking us to make an exception to the rule of the Seventh Circuit. I would understand an argument for overruling this circuit's approach. I mean, neither side cites U.S. against Jewell, but I argued that this circuit's approach is wrong. So I could understand an argument for overruling this circuit's approach, but you don't make that argument. You're trying to make an argument for an exception to the rule that the exclusionary rule doesn't apply. And, of course, we've got a whole bunch of things to which the exclusionary rule doesn't apply. It doesn't apply in immigration law. It doesn't apply in other administrative law. Right? Are there any of those exclusionary rule doesn't apply situations where courts have then made exceptions for egregious behavior?
Well,
any of them. I've looked, and I can't find a single one.
Not to my knowledge, but in the Brema case, which we're arguing, this court did say we're leaving open the question that in a case...
Yeah, we're leaving it open, but that's why I'm asking if any court has filled that box by saying yes. Right? There are many, many administrative law cases where evidence could be suppressed, but never once in U.S. history, apparently, and so on. So you're asking for something extraordinary, whereas just asking for the circuit law to be changed and the exclusionary rule to be applied at sentencing would be, I should think, less extraordinary.
Your Honor, I think in Brema, the court left open that exception purposely and said, for example, in cases where police acted intentionally to increase the sentence, but
many
the argument
things
that
are left open because they're not presented, right? But this kind of argument has had 20 years to be presented in 11 regional courts of appeals, and it appears to be 0-11 for 20 years. It's quite an extraordinary record.
I don't think in our circuit that this particular set of circumstances has been presented. We've looked at the government sites, I believe, the Kruger case. That was a Sixth Amendment right to counsel. In that case, they were arguing the intent portion of that. For example, when the police officers acted with intent. And they said in that case there was no evidence showing that the police acted with intent. In our case, we're arguing that we're just asking this court to look at, does the court, when the court said there would be cases that it might apply if the behavior was egregious, is the court going to apply that, and would our circumstances meet what this court meant by egregious? And I began, though time is limited, with the facts in this case, because the district court found those facts to be at least reckless. The operations plan by the police did include a drug sniff at the residence. That information was not included in the application for the search warrant. The fact that a drug sniff was completed at the car was included. The district court said that was at least reckless on the part of the officers. And I think reckless can have a deliberate reckless behavior can be construed as deliberate behavior. And our goal with applying the exclusionary rule is to deter officers' acts. Is the act sufficiently deliberate that it can be deterred? And is it the behavior itself sufficiently culpable that it's worth the cost of suppressing it at the sentencing hearing? And in this case, we would argue that it is.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Glickman.
May it please the court, I'm Barry Glickman. I'm an assistant United States attorney. I represented the United States in the district court below, as I do here this morning. This is a case in which Judge McKinney got it right when he considered suppressed evidence in calculating the defendant's base offense level. The district court followed the precedents of this court in Brima, in Kruger, in Perez. The court did its due diligence, as it has to do under 3553A, factored in the relevant conduct under 1B1.3, and took into account Title 18 United States Code Section 3661, which says that no limitation should be placed on the information concerning the background, character, and conduct of a defendant, which a court may receive and consider for the purpose of imposing an appropriate sentence. Judge McKinney did exactly that in this case. Judge McKinney was also mindful, as we all are, of the concurrence in Jewell and addressed it at the sentencing hearing. Judge McKinney found that what occurred in this case was reckless by not including the fact that a dog was run around the defendant's house and did not positively alert to the odor of narcotics at that location. We all agree that should have been in there. As soon as I found out, I made a disclosure to the district court and defense counsel. So there's no question that that should have been in the affidavit in support of the search warrant in this case.
So the fear is, you know, that you'll find a minuscule amount of cocaine, let's say, on somebody, and then, you know, we'll start breaking into people's homes deliberately without proper warrants or with warrants that don't pass the Franks test, and just use that to increase the sentence. And so the question is there ever any instance, and let's just leave open what cases would have to be overruled to make this happen. You know, is there ever any instance in which suppression should happen at the sentencing stage?
This court has said in the Brima case, it left open.
I know that. I mean, I'm asking you sort of for the next step, which is what this argument appears to be about.
If there are facts shown, and obviously this is well beyond the record of this case, but if there are facts shown, Your Honor, in which the police conduct was egregious, and I went back and looked up egregious, so it's not just we know it when we see it. It's shocking, appalling, abhorrent.
It's more than reckless, you're arguing.
Absolutely.
Not a synonym.
Absolutely, it's more than reckless. Absolutely, it's more than reckless. Judge McKinney found in this case what occurred was reckless, but it certainly wasn't egregious.
By reckless, he seems to mean extremely careless, I think. I'm not sure.
It was extraordinarily careless, and there was no reason for it. As I said, as soon as I found out about it, I disclosed it, which was absolutely the right thing to do. But the bottom line is, it's different from a scenario in which the police stand over somebody at gunpoint, get a statement from them, and say, where a defendant admits to trafficking in, say, 1,000 kilos of cocaine. That's egregious. That ought never to come in at sentencing. And that's the position of our office. We don't prosecute, we look for justice in cases, not egregious instances of things. And this just flat out wasn't egregious, Your Honor, under the facts of this case. As I said, we're mindful of the concurring opinion in Jewell. Judge McKinney balanced that along with the 3553A factors. He found that under the 3553A factors, the suppressed evidence was important for him to consider, and he did consider it. I would also point out that the deterrent effect of
the exclusion... He did consider it. The sentence is driven by the drugs that are found during the search.
Yes, yes, Your Honor, absolutely.
Yeah.
But the deterrent effect of the exclusionary rule, the deterrent benefit, it was achieved in this case. When this case was indicted back in 2009, the defendant was facing a mandatory minimum on count one of 10 years to life. When the United States filed an 851 information, that got enhanced to 20 years to life by Judge McKinney issuing his order and suppressing the lion's share of the cocaine base in this case. What happened is, count one...
How exactly did that produce deterrence? Was the officer penalized as a result of that order?
The prosecution of this defendant was certain...
Yes, but the prosecution didn't violate the Fourth Amendment. This has always been one of the difficult arguments about the exclusionary rule. If you want to deter violations of the Fourth Amendment, you penalize the people who violate the Fourth Amendment. You don't penalize the people at large. So how exactly was the order suppressing evidence designed to deter violations of the Fourth Amendment?
And that's exactly what the concurrence in Jewell...
This is a big problem with the exclusionary rule as a whole. But that's why I asked about your argument. You stated confidently that the deterrent purpose had been achieved here, and I just wonder how.
Because...
Do you go back to the police and say, boy, you guys really screwed it up for us?
You go back to the police and say you're suspended without pay for a month.
Your Honor,
that would discourage violations.
I wish I could, Your Honor, but and to answer your question, Your Honor, if you heard what I said when I found out, I'd be thrown in jail for saying it in here. But the bottom line is that...
But did you communicate, to follow up on Judge Easterbrook's point?
Absolutely.
You communicated that to the police.
Absolutely.
And told them,
and
hey,
I'll tell you another thing, Your Honor. I dadgum guarantee it that the next time, if this particular officer comes in and wants us to take a case, his work is going to be subject to the highest level of scrutiny. I mean, that's what's going to happen. To answer the court's question in a roundabout way, it was unequivocally communicated to this officer that his sloppiness in this case was unacceptable and was not to happen again, and was told that that's not how the United States Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Indiana does business. I can't suspend the officer. I can't discipline the officer. If I could have, I certainly would have for his reckless conduct in this case. In any event, the evidence that Judge McKinney took into account, it was reliable, it was highly probative, and it was necessary, as I said, for the district court to comply with the dictates of 3553A, 3661, in fashioning a just and reasonable sentence. The court did that in this case, and because of that, I'm respectfully asking this court to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you very much.
Thank you. No time? All right, so your time expired, so we will take the case under advisement. And we thank both counsel.